Marshall, please call the next case.
Calling file A23-1097, Sandra Ann Petrie, petitioner, respondent versus John Edward Petrie, appellant.
Good morning. And we are still on our calendar for May 2nd. Am I right? May 2nd, 2024. This is our last of three cases scheduled for oral argument today. And counsel, if you recall, we do have recordings of the audio for this available on our website within 24 hours on the branch website. So as you begin, please remember to introduce yourself and to introduce your client's name as it should be pronounced. And I believe with that, you're both aware that we have 15 minutes for each of you to argue. Counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. The timer is up here. So counsel for appellant, please come on up and you may begin when you are ready.
Counsel, may it please the court. Good morning, my name is Thomas Brown and I represent the respondent appellant John Petrie in this matter that is before the Court of Appeals. Karen versus Karen stands for the proposition, the very clear proposition, that the district court is divested of jurisdiction if the parties reach an agreement that is supported by consideration in the findings of fact and conclusions of law. Accordingly, subsequent litigation, when a Karen waiver is included in the findings of fact and conclusions of law, is prohibited. Unfortunately, that was not the case in this matter. The standard of review that we're asking the court to adopt in this matter is a de novo standard of review, looking at the Karen versus Karen language and applying that very clear directive that so many people rely on in family law litigation. The clarity of Karen is really important because of the significant impact it has on the litigants that in fact use the Karen language. The history in this case is somewhat unique. My client, Mr. Petrie, had custody, primary custody of the minor children. The petitioner in this matter was in medical school at the time when their judgment and decree was entered. And the 2020 order essentially did a couple of things. One, obviously assigned custody and parenting time. Two, it assigned child support. And then three, addressed spousal maintenance. And page 16, findings 9 and 10 and 11 are really at issue with respect to the appeal in this matter. The court reviewed this case based on the respondent's mother's motion to modify custody. The court, in fact, granted mother's motion to modify custody, which substantially changed the parenting time and accordingly the child support. In doing so, when the court recalculated child support for the first time, there were two orders from the district court. The first order amending child support and spousal maintenance, and then a subsequent order which amended maintenance and child support again based on essentially a mathematical error that the court made in its second order. But in reviewing the motions before the court went beyond the request to just modify child support and modify parenting time and custody. It modified spousal maintenance. And the Karen waiver contained in the judgment and decree, paragraph 11, is very clear. Spousal maintenance is not subject to any cost of living increases other than increase or extension, and the court is divested of all jurisdiction to modify, limit, or extend spousal maintenance. That's very common Karen language that you see in almost every judgment and decree where there is a Karen waiver. Where this case is different is the preceding two paragraphs above allow for the court to essentially retain partial jurisdiction in the event that the child support obligation is modified. Karen stands for the proposition that there is total divestation of jurisdiction for the district court. What the court did, what the Scrivener did here, is created ambiguity between two paragraphs. One, paragraph 11, completely divesting the court of jurisdiction, but then on the alternative, reserving jurisdiction to be able to amend the maintenance amount in the event that the child support changes. These two paragraphs are in direct conflict. And it's hard to understand the district court's rationale that ultimately—
Counsel, is the district court really amending the amount of spousal maintenance where the agreement is clear that the amount of spousal maintenance includes an offset for petitioner's child support. This is in paragraph 9. And that should petitioner's child support obligation be reduced, her support, spousal support shall increase by the same amount to continue to reflect this offset. So the agreement is clear that basically the child, that the maintenance amount includes an offset. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that the decree is not necessarily clear with that. What I think should
happen. What is not clear when it says that the amount of 15, 18, and 51 cents includes an offset for petitioner's child support obligation? How is that not clear?
Well, I think it's inconsistent, Your Honor, with paragraph 9, page 15, where it states, as in for temporary spousal maintenance, respondent shall pay the petitioner $1,518.51 per month. In that paragraph, there is no reference to the offset. That comes later in the preceding paragraphs. I think that for clarity purposes,
it's all part of paragraph 9, though. I mean, it's continuing on to explain the amount of maintenance. It's all within paragraph 9, right?
It's all within paragraph 9. Yes, that's correct.
So don't we read that as a whole?
I think you read it as a whole. However, to your previous question, you know, did the court amend the decree? I think the answer to that is no, but it modified maintenance. And with a Karen waiver, this is a matter of first impression, frankly, where there's a carve out for the benefit of one party.
But it didn't modify maintenance because it says the amount includes an offset. And if you, at least in my reading of this, and help me understand why I'm wrong, but doesn't this paragraph 9 implicitly say that child support is set at $2,467.51 because it's the amount of maintenance, which is $1,518.51 plus the child support offset, which is $949, which totals the $2,467.51.
That's correct. That's correct.
And that maintenance support never increased above that amount in any of these orders.
That is correct.
So why aren't the orders consistent in terms of maintenance?
With a Karen waiver, it is the position of the appellant, and I think it's consistent with case law as well, that there is a maintenance designation and there's a child support designation. And clearly the maintenance designation is $1,518.51. The court wasn't asked to modify the spousal maintenance amount. It did it sua sponte. And it did it based on, I think, its reading of paragraph 9, where Judge Chase also, you know, determined that there was no ambiguity between the terms. However, that can't be read, I think, consistently with paragraph 11, where there's a divestation of all jurisdiction to make any modification.
But wouldn't it actually, the court have actually been undertaking jurisdiction to change the spousal maintenance if it didn't follow the language of paragraph 9 and comply with the offset that's required there if the petitioner's child support obligation is reduced? I mean, if the court would be, I mean, it's one decree and the court would be actually modifying the decree and actually taking jurisdiction on itself if it didn't comply with the terms of paragraph 9 in their totality, right?
Well, I think that the distinction there is one that when you specifically carve out a maintenance amount, and they have here, it's the $1,518.51.
So but it includes an offset, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. But then to include the Karen language that no modification can be made and the court's divested of all jurisdiction to modify, limit, or extend maintenance, I believe that those two things are intrinsically inconsistent.
Right. So what you're really arguing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that as soon as the Karen waiver was included in the decree, that effectively struck all of that language in paragraph 9 regarding the offset. Is that really what you're saying?
It's the appellant's position that, yes, Your Honor, that the two are inconsistent. If there's going to be an ability to modify spousal maintenance, then there cannot be a Karen waiver.
Well, why wouldn't we read? Oh, sir, go ahead.
No, you're going to ask the question I was going to ask. So you go ahead.
I was just saying, why wouldn't we try to read this decree in a way exercising our de novo review to harmonize those terms, to go back to what I was saying earlier, which would be the district court is divested of doing anything to change paragraph 9. Mm-hmm. And what you're actually arguing for here is to have the district court change paragraph 9 to exclude the offset, which was part of the decree to begin with.
Well, I think number one, fundamentally, that when a Karen clause is included, the modification of spousal maintenance with an offset should not be consistent. That you cannot
have
that.
Can you cite us any case law that would preclude an agreement of this type?
This is a matter of first impression in that regard. We've looked through, all of our research found nothing similar to this, where you have an offset, you have a specific spousal maintenance amount included, and then you've got the child support amount, and there's nothing out there to help give this court better direction with respect to that issue. But I think there's also another point that's really important here. Karen has to be supported by consideration. And Karen talks about in paragraph 11, it says that there is consideration. However, the reality is this. Under these circumstances, mother's child support amount went up significantly because she had more time. The spousal maintenance amount also went up. So what that resulted in essentially is about a 300% increase of support to mother. So when the parties initially negotiated their spousal maintenance settlement, they looked at the budgets, and the budgetary information is in the agreement. And they reached a number that would meet mother's budget. That changes significantly when her child support goes way up. And the court also increases the maintenance because there's no offset any longer because she's not paying child support. Now she's receiving it. So there's only one way to benefit from this agreement, and that's for mother. And that's not properly supported by consideration, that mother's circumstances would no longer matter in the event that there's a modification of child support because the maintenance amount is already fixed. So I think that the court.
Did you make this argument, lack of consideration or lack of specific consideration to the district court?
We did. Yes. It was part of the oral argument. And essentially it was on the motion for reconsideration where this was really, I think, flushed out, because the benefit that mother got by this change of custody and parenting time, she benefited twofold. One, from the child support amount, and two, from the increase in the maintenance. But if we're going to look at a change of circumstances related to the children, we can't look at mom's change of financial circumstances because she was working as a medical doctor at the time. Maintenance wouldn't have even been supported because she essentially was earning more income than my client at the time of this modification. So the court used that Karen waiver to preclude examining the party's current circumstances, but then the current circumstances merited a change of custody and parenting time, which then resulted in this significant change of financial responsibility to my client. So Karen, I think under these circumstances, supported the fact that there was a baseline of child support and spousal maintenance. It was a combination of those two that got mother to be able to meet her budgetary needs. But when we look at the change of custody that increases her support, increases her maintenance, her budgetary needs are no longer examined because the Karen clause precludes the court from doing so.
But isn't this just you stating then that your client is dissatisfied with the terms that he agreed to? And we look at the stipulation as a contract?
So, my client is dissatisfied with the results of what happened at the district court. The reality is this. He believes that the negotiation that he reached with respect to the specific amount that was going to be required from him on a monthly basis, this combination of support and maintenance, that it was essentially not going to change. In fact, was not the case.
Well, isn't that, assuming that is true, that was his belief, isn't that contrary to the plain language of the agreement, which says should petitioner's child support obligation be reduced, her spousal support shall increase by the same amount to continue to reflect this offset?
Well, I think that is the language that's contained in the stipulation, which again, we believe runs contrary to the notion of Karen that there can be no modification. So
but there you haven't pointed us to any case that says the parties can't agree to a Karen waiver of this type.
Correct.
That specifically contemplates an adjustment and says to account for an offset. It's really not an adjustment. It's just how that total amount gets paid. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't seem like the amount of maintenance is changing. It's just a change in how it gets paid.
Well, I think that there's a distinction, right? Because we're calling something spousal maintenance, then we're calling other monies child support. So the maintenance amount is increasing. I get if you look at it from 30,000 feet, it looks the same, but these distinctions have meaning. Karen has meaning with respect to the jurisdictional divestiture.
How is the maintenance amount increasing when you've acknowledged it includes an offset?
Well, it includes an offset because that number essentially was the global number they agreed to. So
they didn't agree that child support couldn't change.
It can't, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So,
and therein lies the problem with a Karen exception of this kind, because there's only one party that can benefit therefrom. And Karen stands for the proposition that there can be no additional modifications. Thank you.
You'll have an additional 5 minutes. For now, we'll turn to counsel for respondent.
Sorry, Judge.
So there are 15 minutes on the clock. Please remember to introduce yourself and your client, and you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Anthony Moosbrugger, attorney for Cassandra Petrie. It is our position here that the district court did not modify the Petrie spousal maintenance obligation in any of its orders. It was merely enforcing the offset clause in the agreement. The original decree provided that Mr. Petrie was to pay Ms. Petrie spousal maintenance in the amount of $2,467.51. The decree does not state that specifically, or verbatim rather, but it is clear from the language of the whole agreement that that was the maintenance obligation. It was stated, if we look at the numbers, $1,518.51 plus the child support of $949, we have $2,467.51. Although that equation was not stated in the decree itself, it was stated in words and was acknowledged. And it seems that the appellant is acknowledging that offset. The district court found that this language in the decree was clear and unambiguous, and we're asking that Your Honors find that as well today.
Is the language in paragraph 9 appellant was focused on inconsistent with the Karen waiver, as appellant argues?
I don't believe so. And I guess I would point to the statute. It superseded Karen 518.552 subdivision 5, which provides that an agreement can expressly preclude or limit modification. And again, it's my argument that it wasn't modified, but if we want to characterize it as being modified, that was a limited exception in the agreement, specifically stated as we're going to offset this obligation by the child support obligation. If the child support obligation changes, the spousal maintenance obligation goes back up. The idea here is the parties weren't going to both exchange checks. You know, no reason for Ms. Petrie to write a check to Mr. Petrie for the child support if she's just going to get it back in spousal maintenance. So from that perspective, when her obligation went away, the maintenance obligation didn't change at all. She just no longer had to pay child support. Mr. Petrie argues that the decree is unclear because the child support worksheet listed spousal maintenance obligation of $1,518. I think there's two possible reasons for that. One was just an error I think it's pretty common for both attorneys and judges to err when imputing numbers into the child support worksheet. But that doesn't change the fact of the actual language in the decree that was correct and that was used for purposes of telling us what the obligations are as far as spousal maintenance and child support. Another possible scenario there would be is they use that number because they were essentially reverse engineering the support obligation, the child support obligation. They entered the number in the maintenance column that would generate the child support obligation they needed to get to their maintenance obligation that they were agreeing to. That's not an uncommon approach when they're coming to the conclusion of what the maintenance obligation is. Appellant makes a lot of statements about how they came to that conclusion as far as what that amount was. But really the decree doesn't tell us how they came to that conclusion. It's just speculation what appellant is arguing as far as how they came to that number. But if we were to go along with that argument of appellants, it doesn't work. The conclusion is supported by the fact that in the body of the divorce decree, the maintenance was identified as $1,518.51. So under Mr. Petrie's argument, in the child support worksheet, it should have been listed as $1,519, but that wasn't the case. And if it was the intent of the parties to set spousal maintenance as $1,518.51, the language that amount includes an offset for petitioner's child support obligation is meaningless. And when your honors are looking at this agreement, I believe you have to look at the whole agreement, all the language in the decree to figure out what the intent of the parties were.
Is your reading of the agreement inconsistent with the prepayment language as appellant argues in appellant's brief?
I guess I'm not sure what you're asking.
The language in paragraph 9 that it's on page 16 of your addendum, it's paragraph 9B, respondent has the option to prepay maintenance, and goes on to say, therefore, should a lump sum be paid at any point, this lump sum shall be subtracted from the remaining balance of maintenance payments due and owing to petitioner, and the difference shall be divided by the number of months of payments remaining of the 72 months. And I think appellant argues in its brief at page 18 that language only makes sense if the amount of spousal maintenance does not fluctuate with changes in child support.
I guess I wouldn't agree that number, that prepayment could be made because it doesn't change again. The prepayment would be based off of what that obligation is, $26,000. And if there was, or.
So basically your view is that the amount of maintenance doesn't fluctuate because the amount of maintenance is $24.67.51.
Correct. And so, if there was a scenario where he prepaid all that, then Ms. Petrie wouldn't have that offset and she could pay child support. But if we have this scenario where child support does get changed, it would just be a matter of, potentially just reimbursing him for that difference, but it doesn't make it unenforceable, I don't believe. I don't believe I have a whole lot more to say other than, you know, this, my reading of this decree, it is not ambiguous. It's clear. There should be no question. I think the arguments are borderline frivolous. It's just so clear that this was an agreement of the parties. The court was in fact required to make an adjustment if child support was to change. The notion that that's a modification of the decree is just wrong. It's enforcing the decree. There was another thought, but I lost it.
Is the Karen waiver supported by adequate consideration?
Yes. The case cited here, goes over what is necessary. The four parameters there, every one of them were included in the judgment and decree. The first one, the stipulation must include a contractual waiver of the parties. That's on page 4 of the decree. The stipulation must expressly devise the jurisdiction of jurisdiction over maintenance. That's in page 16 of the decree. The stipulation must be incorporated into the final judgment and decree. It was throughout on page 4 and 16. The court must make specific findings that the stipulation is fair and equitable, is supported by consideration described in the findings, and there's a full disclosure of each party's financial circumstances has occurred. That happened on page 4. I think there is the argument from appellant is it wasn't enough, but the court has ruled that exact language is indeed enough. There was adequate consideration in the decree. The argument of appellant that it's no longer fair and equitable doesn't work because that's the whole purpose of the waiver, the parties knew what their circumstances were then, they knew what circumstances could change, and they agreed that this is what we're going to do. We're going to set it at a finite amount so we don't have to worry about it changing in the future. And, the argument that, I guess it's this argument that it's not equitable, that maybe he didn't know that Ms. Petrie's circumstances would change. Well, obviously he did. She was in a residency program during the time of their divorce. He knew that that was going to complete, and the expectation was she was going to become a doctor and her income would increase, and that's what happened. So expectations were there. He knew that, and he made an agreement based on it.
How do you respond to the notion that this is a case of first impression based on the language that was included in paragraph 9?
I don't think there is it is a case of first impression. I don't think this is really different than any other decree that has this Karen waiver language in it. I don't think there's really anything special about this. The statute provides that the parties can agree to a partial, either a full divestiture or a partial divestiture of jurisdiction to make modifications. For instance, sometimes you're going to have a modification based on a cost of living increase. You know, you're not changing anything other than that. I don't believe that is a case of first impression.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you, counsel. And we will turn back to counsel for appellant for the last word. We'll have 5 minutes for your rebuttal. Excuse me. And give us a moment to get the clock set. Okay. You may begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. Let's talk about how this decree could have been drafted differently and how much clearer it could be. If you look at paragraph 9, the plain language of that first sentence is that spousal maintenance respondent shall pay the petitioner the sum of $1,518.51. What the parties could have done is articulated that much differently. They could have actually done the math and stated that maintenance is set at $2,467 and then deducted the child support amount from that so that there's consistency and one doesn't have to infer kind of what's going on here. But nowhere in this decree does it state explicitly that the spousal maintenance amount is $2,467. In fact, to the contrary, it's $1,518 in paragraph 9 on page 15. The language with respect to the prepayment, also $1,518.51. And specifically, and perhaps most importantly, in the child support calculation. Because the child support calculation lists the spousal maintenance amount as $1,500. I think that there was a clerical error. And $18.
Did your client ever move to reopen under 518.145 subdivision 2 to seek relief from the judgment and decree, the stipulated judgment and decree?
No.
Isn't that an under Shirk v. Shirk? Isn't that really the remedy that you would need to seek to ask for some of these changes that you're proposing here to the language of the decree?
So if we believe that it required changes to the language of the decree, however, we think that the plain language of the decree and the stipulation of the parties identifies maintenance in three separate spaces at $1,518.
How do we reconcile that? Go ahead.
I agree with you that it does list that number, but then you have to read the agreement as a whole and paragraph 9 as a whole, and paragraph 9 on page 15 sets forth that for maintenance respondent shall pay to petitioner the sum of $1,518.51 per month. And then on page 16, it goes on to explain how that's going to work going forward. And it says the amount includes an offset, and should petitioner's child support obligation be reduced, so the offsets for child support, should the petitioner's child support obligation be reduced, her spousal support shall increase by the same amount to reflect the offset. Thereafter, the court shall be divested of jurisdiction to award petitioner any further or additional maintenance. So that language is clear that the court has the authority, because it says thereafter the court shall be divested. So that, to me, that language is clear that the court has the authority to increase maintenance if in the dollar for dollar where petitioner's child support obligation is reduced. And I think also I don't think the language is clear that it is a static $1,518.51 obligation under this agreement. It includes the offset, and the court specifically has the authority to increase it if that, you know, to reflect a reduction in child support.
And I can appreciate that point, Your Honor. I think why the child support calculation is so important is that if the maintenance truly was $2,467, that should be included in the maintenance, you know, obligation, so that he gets a decrease of his income and then accordingly a decrease in his PICS percentage.
You were also pointing us to the child support section, paragraph 5, I believe, right?
Correct.
That starts on page 13, goes to page 14, and towards the end of part A, it says any decrease, so it sets forth the amount of petitioners, the amount that petitioner is supposed to pay in child support. Any decrease in petitioner's child support obligation shall be reflected by a dollar for dollar increase in spousal maintenance. So there again, it's saying that the court is to increase the spousal maintenance. So I guess I'm really having a hard time understanding your argument that the maintenance amount is not implicitly set at the 2457 number, I believe it is, or 67 number, and that the it is set in stone at $1,518.51.
May I just respond briefly?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. So when you look at the child support worksheet, I think that frames up the issue a little bit better, because it shows the deduction that he's getting for the payment of spousal maintenance being $1,518. And if that was true, that it was really supposed to be $2,467, that line item 1D on the calculation should reflect the same. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to both counsel today for your briefs and for the argument here. This has been very helpful, and the case is submitted and will be issuing an opinion within the statutory timeframe. So thank you.